So whether this is your first or fourth or 40th or 400th time of learning Tanya together, the truth is that it's very hard for any one of the Tanya lessons to stand on their own. That's the truth. This is a composite. And the more you learn Tanya, the more you appreciate it, especially because we're in the middle of a chapter now. But nonetheless, I think that there's value and merit to studying even a piece of Tanya, even a portion of Tanya. We're in the 16th chapter. And what we talked about in the first part of this chapter so far is a klal gadol, a big rule with regard to a beinoni. So I briefly reintroduce for everybody's benefit, a beinoni is a regular person. A regular person who is beset with the normal problems that each and every human being would have to deal with. The regular challenges which include a yetzer hara, evil inclination, which include the natural desire to behave in an unhealthy, unwholesome fashion, and the Beinoni's job is to do the right thing nonetheless, which means to serve Hashem, which is counterintuitive. It is counterintuitive for a person to be filled with alacrity instead of laziness. It's counterintuitive for a person to be filled with joy and happiness instead of sometimes melancholy. It's counterintuitive for a person to be filled with a sense of dedication and loyalty and devotion to others and things which are outside of themselves instead of asking what's in it for me. All these things are counterintuitive. So Hashem created us, and He gave us a nature which is counterintuitive, if you will, to spirituality. And our challenge is that we should become servants of Hashem nonetheless. And, in fact, when we become servants of Hashem despite our nature, that's when we are serving Hashem for real. So in the previous example, for example, Alter Rebbe talked about the person who's considered an Oved HaLikim. Who is the Oved HaLikim? Who is the Oved? Who is the one who's really a servant of God? The person who transcends nature. And he brought the Gemara that says the difference between one who really serves God and one who doesn't serve God is the difference between one who reviews his lessons 100 times or 101 times, which at a technical level is not relevant today anymore because we don't review our lessons 100 times. And we have books and we have a vast array of Torah teachings that's available to us. That's true. However, once upon a time, people did not have the benefit of books and libraries that we have them today. They certainly didn't have the ability to press a button and bring up whatever they wanted whenever they wanted. So people had to actually commit what they studied to memory. And how do you do so? You review it again and 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 then again 100 times. And that was the nature. That was the accepted norm. And because that was the accepted norm, to go beyond the norm required enormous inner strength. Because I don't do that. That's not me. This is me. This is what I'm used to doing. And that's not me. The Alter Rebbe says, aha. That's where we capture the notion of Avedus Hashem. That's where somebody becomes a servant of Hashem. Why? Because they went beyond their nature. Because they went beyond what comes easy or comes natural or what's intuitive. And sometimes the intuitive reality is directly linked to the way we were born, to our genetics. And oftentimes the intuitive reality is going to be linked to not nature but nurture, what we become used to. This is the society we live in. This is the culture that we are raised in or become accustomed to. And because of that, this is what I do and that's what I don't do. When you come along to a person and ask him to go beyond the comfort zone, that is where nature ends and Avedus Hashem begins. Nature and Avedus Hashem are not one and the same. Nature is about me, Avedus Hashem is about God. And to go beyond me, to serve God, is a very difficult thing, a very challenging thing, but a very possible thing. And that's the premise of Tanya, that it's possible. Now, when the Alter Rebbe talks about the requirement, or the mission, the purpose, or the goal that every one of us has to be an Oved HaLikim, to serve Hashem, he emphasizes that it's Karev Elecha. That's the premise of this book. It's exceedingly close to you, even though it's Neged HaChush, even though it goes against our nature. It's very, very close to us. It's something every one of us could achieve, something every one of us could accomplish. How so? How do we do so? The answer is we have to marshal or harness the natural powers that God gave us. That's one of the methodologies, one of the chief ideas which are conveyed to us in Sefer HaTanya. And since the name of the movement is Chabad, the Chabad is an acronym for Chochma Bina and Das, which means the beginning of all intellectuality comes with an epiphany, with an idea, with an awareness. Aha, the aha moment. The aha moment is followed by the process of analysis and the process of careful examination, which is called Bina. And then we reach a point in which it becomes our opinion, it becomes our natural inclination. That becomes who we are. And that's kind of like what we call das. But this is all within the framework of emotion, intellectual activity. And the Alter Rebbe, in the way he taught the Torah of the Baal Shem Tov, the way he distilled the teachings of the Maggid, is that Avedas Hashem has to be experienced first and foremost cerebrally, intellectually, marshaling and harnessing the natural powers, the powers of the mind. And only after we harness the powers of the mind and utilize them fully can we then develop healthy emotions. And even though 250 years ago, healthy emotions were not something that was on the table, people didn't talk about it, that's actually what the Alter Rebbe focuses on. He focuses on healthy emotions, a balanced emotion, not runaway emotions, not false emotions, not lying to oneself or living a life of deception, but actually to have a healthy and balanced form of passion and feeling and fervor. That's called a healthy emotion. And he said the healthy emotions are developed through a solid base, through a healthy and grounded understanding of mystical concepts. So the first klal gadol then, Alter Rebbe says, for a beinoni to be able to serve Hashem not only functionally, not only that as a, in a matter of fact level, he or she is doing what they're supposed to do, not only on a functional level, but Hashem wants you to serve Him, that one harnesses one's personality, that one's being, one's essence becomes drawn into Avedas Hashem, which is a key component, a key part of Avedas Hashem, because otherwise leave half of me behind. If a person doesn't engage their own creative powers, a person leaves their emotions at the door, so they're spiritually incomplete. They're intellectually and emotionally dead. It's just a person that becomes like a robot. They're just doing what Hashem wants them to do. So there's a checklist of mitzvahs, there's 613 mitzvahs, and they daven every day, and they give tzedakah every day, and they do all the mitzvahs every day, and even go beyond their nature. So where are you? Where are you in this? Me? I don't know. I took myself out of this equation a long time ago. I put myself to sleep. I can't deal with myself. I can't deal with who I am. I can't deal with personality. It gets in the way of my observance of mitzvahs. And the main thing is just to do mitzvahs. So therefore, I forgot about me. And instead, I just focused on what does God want? What does God expect? And I try to go through those motions. In some way, that's a very high level of devotion. That's an incredible level of commitment to Hashem. You could put yourself aside, forget about yourself, and do what Hashem wants. On the other hand, there's a problem here. And the problem is that you're supposed to serve Hashem, all of you. And since all of you are supposed to serve Hashem, if you left your heart and mind at the door, half of you is simply not engaged in the process. That's not good. There is an approach to Avedas Hashem which says exactly what we just mentioned. But that's not the approach of Chassidus Chabad. It's actually funny for me when people say to me that Lubavitch is a cult or Chabad is a cult. I find it laughable because the whole notion of a cult is something that disables creativity, somebody that disables emotional well-being, where the person of the cult is simply following orders, doing whatever they're told to do by a superior, and their emotional, intellectual realities are cast aside. And they have to be brainwashed, which is a terminology used for something that shuts off brain activity, where you're just going to repeat the mantra and keep what everybody's saying the whole time, and you really like what you're doing. Who am I? I just have to love what the leader loves or whatever else it is. You okay? So we have this notion of a lack of individual expression, lack of individual engagement, lack of individual power development. But that's the opposite of Chassidus Chabad. Chassidus Chabad necessitates and requires not only our functional level, but also our emotional level and ultimately our intellectual level. And it's not in that order. It starts with the intellect. Now, how do I see that a person, it's all about the intellect? Because when a person's mind, you want something very badly, and you understand something very well, you're able to transcend your natural likes and desires. Every one of us is capable of doing exercise that we don't enjoy. Every one of us is capable of taking medicine that we don't like. Every one of us is capable of harnessing and engaging ourselves in behavior which is not intuitive, which breaks all of the natural limitations. Why do we do it? Oh, I'll tell you why we do it. Because we decided that's the right thing for us. So when a person came to the realization that they're overweight, or a person came to the realization that they're slothful, or a person came to the realization that I'm not accomplishing or self-actualization in the way I want it, and that I realize there is a way for me to do this, I can decide to do it. So it's all in the mind. Alter Rebbe says, therefore, what should a person do to become a more effective member of Am Yisrael? What should you do to be a true Oved HaLikim? The first thing is that you have to contemplate the greatness of God. You have to contemplate the idea of God's requirement for you, that God needs you. And this is, Alter Rebbe doesn't tell you what to think about, that's elsewhere, but he tells you that you should be thinking about these things. And if you focus on these things, Then, at a certain point, it will be totally antithetical to everything you know and feel and believe to do an Aveda. You would never do an Aveda. If you would contemplate long enough what the Aveda means, what happens when a Jew experiences a rebellion against God, he or she would never rebel against God. Would never do that. That's very nice. So this is the first rule. Now, Alter Rebbe now is troubleshooting. And he says, okay, there's another problem which is going to crop up for the Beinoni. And the problem is that not everything I understand is always going to become translated into a healthy emotional reality. And there are a variety of reasons for this. And sometimes it's a natural limitation. Sometimes we don't function emotionally. There are non-emotional people. And because they're non-emotional people, they believe in compassion, they believe in sensitivity, they respect it, but they're not able to experience it. This is a really bad example, but I'm going to give it anyway because I think it helps us understand. Many of you heard of a man named John Kerry. I don't like him very much. I think he's a really bad guy, actually. That's just my personal opinion. Don't hold it against me. The name Kerry in Hebrew means impurity. The mayor used to say, look at names. You know, like, now, at very least, whether you say it's ritual impurity, it for sure means indifference. A cold, frosty indifference. And he happens to be an extremely indifferent person. He doesn't emote. There's no emotion when he speaks. No emotion when he connects. So I remember reading an article the day after he lost the election. And the gist of the article was, he finally found his emotional zone. But he found it like 6 months too late. On the day he was handed defeat, he actually gave an emotional speech. He said something like, and I have no idea why I remember this. He said something like, I would scoop every one of you up in my arms and hug you and tell you how much I appreciate and love you. And like the people went crazy. His fan base was so excited to actually hear the man emote. But the man doesn't emote. That's not who he is, not his nature. He's a cold, indifferent fellow. He looks disdainful in his nature. Now, this has nothing to do with his politics, nothing to do with his ridiculous attitude towards Israel and the Jewish people. I'm not even going there. Forget that. I'm just using this as a frame of example. Here's a person who would need to get into a better emotional zone. Because he's not. He doesn't know how to emote. There are some people that emote amazingly. They're able to touch heartstrings. They wear the heart on their sleeve. They're able to be emotional. They have no problem. They're not afraid of being emotional. And when they speak, they're emotional, and they engage people emotionally, and you feel that when they're communicating, you feel that there's a passion for what they're talking about. You know they're excited about this. Like, I don't know how smart Martin Luther King Jr. King was or wasn't, but I know from the few speeches I listened to, he was an extremely emotional person. And he felt strongly for his cause, and he was able to bring out the best from his people. For the people who rallied around him. Why? Because he excelled emotionally. He was an emotional genius. This is what we call, in modern parlance, EQ. For a long time, we talked about IQ, intellectual quotients. Today, we're talking about EQ, talking about emotional quotients. Emotional quotients means the ability to relate. There are some people who are very brilliant, but they're living in an ivory tower. They can't relate to other people. And because they can't relate to other people, they don't successfully integrate with other people. And therefore, they can't successfully harness the powers and abilities. They can't motivate other people. Why? Because then I can't relate. They have no idea what anybody else is talking about. They're wrapped up in themselves. It's not necessarily because they're egotistical. It's because, for whatever reason, in the balance of their personality, they have a heavy emphasis on intellectuality, but intellectuality that is objective, not subjective, and intellectuality that is indifferent, that is aloof, not one that is warm, passionate, and engaging. That person has an issue. He has a problem. Then you have the person whose emotions are all over the place, who's dominated entirely by emotions, who doesn't have virtually any intelligence or self-control whatsoever. They just flip out all the time. And that's not very impressive either, because a person has to have balance and control. So a person has too much of emotions, also unhealthy. That's just emotions run amok. He's usually a train wreck. People like that are all over the place. What is needed? Balance. What is Torah about? Balance. So it was given lots of shalom. What is shalom? Shalom is synergy. Shalom is balance. Shalom means to be able to have inner peace. The person has inner balance. They're comfortable in their own skin. They know what they want to do. They know what they don't want to do. And they have a balance of the soul powers that Hashem gives them. Says the Alter Rebbe now as he continues on in chapter 16. V'yes et al kein tzarach leida. In addition to everything we said, you have to know. A klal gadol ba'aveda lebeinanim. A klal gadol, a great rule, a great principle in the Aveda of a Beinoni. Now again, Beinoni is every one of us. The tzaddik is a person who is able to cut the cords that tether him to earth. The tzaddik is a person who is able to fly. He can fly. He can break the atmosphere. Tzaddik is a person, a man or woman, who experiences weightlessness insofar as selfishness is concerned. It's not about them anymore. It's all about the Kaddish Baruch Hu. It's all about Am Yisrael. It's all about Torah. They don't even have the desires that a regular person has. They don't have the lust that a regular person has. They don't have the craving that a regular person has. They may lose this, they become totally disinterested in anything which is selfishly oriented. Indulgence and pleasure are anathema to them. They don't know what that means. It's like a person was, every one of us was once upon a time in nursery school, and whether you believe it, remember it or not, you once used to love to play with dolls or blocks or finger paint and wear smocks and do all kinds of silly things, and that was amazing. And you were so jealous of the kid who got the red fire truck and you got stuck with the blue fire truck, for example, or the one who got the Barbie doll and you got stuck with the other doll. But you know what happened? You grew up. And now the thought of being forced to sit on the floor in a room full of children and play with dolls would be emotional and mental torture for you. And if you were going to do it, you would do it. You would do it. If that's what had to be done, you would do it. And if it was your own grandchildren, you might even enjoy it to some degree. But you never get caught up in playing with dolls. You enjoy it because you're connecting with your grandchildren. You enjoy it because you're connecting with your children. Maybe you're an early childhood educator, so you enjoy it because you're a nursery teacher. You don't really enjoy it. When you have some free time on your hands, when you're not doing your job, that's not say, where are those dolls? Let me get a hold of those fire trucks. No, you're playing with your grandchildren. That's what you want to do. Why? Because you want to connect to them. You want to stimulate them. You have nachas. You have joy, inner satisfaction when you see them grow, when you see them satisfied, you see them emotionally balanced. That's the tzaddik is with us. The tzaddik engages with us. And the tzaddik watches us. And he's like, Nebuch, these people are so stunted. But he doesn't look at it that way. The tzaddik sees his children. It's his children, it's his grandchildren. Tzaddik has nachas. When the little four-year-old child actually cracks a smile and does something that's somewhat semi-intelligent, the tzaddik is so touched by it. And that's how the Rebbe has to deal with us. So the Rebbe devoted himself not to living in his world, to living in our world. Like you become an ECE teacher, you devote yourself to living in the child's world and not living in your world. The amazing thing about the ECE teacher is that at a certain point, at 12 o'clock or 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock, they turn that off and they turn life on. And they do what they like to do afterwards. But the tzaddik never turns himself off. The tzaddik is always there. He's always engaged. He spends his whole life doing that. He doesn't have any time for himself. And there's some beautiful teachings about that emotional expression of the greatest tzaddikim, that the tzaddikim who never had a moment for themselves, were never able to even see where they are or how they're doing because it was all about everybody else. And that's very nice for tzaddikim. And what a kind of avodah is that? And if they don't have to overcome challenges, I don't really know. I'm not a tzaddik. And I'm probably never going to know, and neither will anybody around this table. And that's okay, because that's not what God expects of us. But he does expect of us to be a good Beinoni. And the Beinoni is a person who is able to experience an average. What does it mean? What's the average? The average score is a perfect score. That's the average score. That's what we're supposed to be aiming for, the stars, a perfect score. Knowing full well that we will never be able to fully transform ourselves. That will always be some ugliness, some selfishness. There will always be a Yetzirah lurking in the shadows, and we'll have to contend with him. And this is really important for a person to know if he's a tzaddik or beinoni, because if he thinks he's a tzaddik, then he misinterprets those feelings. He thinks that those feelings are actually a good thing. When he's a beinoni, he knows that those feelings are dark, and those feelings are ugly, and those feelings are inappropriate, and he has to battle them rather than engage and elevate them. I think Nachum Breslev once said that when a tzaddik has bad thoughts, it's not his thoughts. So therefore, he should elevate the thoughts. It's somebody, he got stuck with somebody else's thoughts. So he's stuck with somebody else's thoughts. He now has to redirect those thoughts and find a way, a lesson in Avodas Hashem. When you have bad thoughts, what should you do with it? You should push it away. That's what you should do with it. You should not engage with it. As the Tzemach Tzedek wrote, if you wrestle with a dirty one, guess what? You become dirty too. So the approach of Chabad is push it away. Don't dwell on it. Don't dwell on the negativity. The Tzaddik could, but you're not there. So you have to know if you're a Tzaddik. Okay, we know we're not Tzaddikim. Whether you're fine with it or not fine with it is actually irrelevant. That's what it is. And therefore, you have to move on. How do you move on? Here's the cloud gadol. There's a cloud gadol that you really have to know. That it's possible that you will spend your time studying and contemplating and harnessing your intellectual powers and abilities. And what happens? You say, I'm working so hard. I'm toiling. I'm contemplating. I'm meditating. Dare I use that word? I'm using my mind, my mental powers, and nothing. I'm not stimulated emotionally. I don't really care. I'm not really passionate about this. And I'm not effective. That, what does that mean? Be effective. That my heart is burning like a flaming coal. V'chefetz, v'chafetz, v'chashek, I have this craving, I have this yearning, this tshuka, this thirst, murgeshes, I can actually feel the thirst, b'level davkabay. I'm spiritually starved, and I feel a hunger for it. There's a difference here between yearning, between craving. A person, everybody likes food. At least normal people. A person doesn't like food has a problem. A person doesn't have an appetite. Either they're in a state of emotional meltdown, or they possibly have an illness. It's not healthy. If we wouldn't have appetites, we might never eat. Might never eat, we'll eventually die. It's the same reason why we need pain. If you don't feel pain, you don't know that you cut your finger. If you don't really cut your finger, how are you ever going to take care of it? God forbid, when a person doesn't have feeling in a certain part of his body, it's a very dangerous thing. You know, you go to the dentist and they freeze part of your mouth, tell you not to eat for the next 2 hours. Why not? Very simple. Because when you eat, you might chew off a piece of yourself and not feel it. And boy, will you feel it later. Right? So feelings are very important. The nerve endings are extremely important part of existence. Because that's the warning system. It says, uh-oh, something wrong here. So pain is good. I mean, it's not good, but it is good. It's a necessary part of life. Now, we're talking about a person who likes food. Yeah, everybody likes food. Everybody likes food. If you place the right food in front of somebody, they're going to start eating. Oh, I don't really like that food. Fine. It's food you really like. You're going to start eating. Or you have a really big battle with yourself and trying not to indulge, not to eat, and so on and so forth. So you like food. What happens if you haven't eaten like in 12 hours? What happens if you're famished? First of all, you don't just like food. You're craving the food. You're thirsting for the food. You're going crazy for the food. And when the food gets placed in front of you, even if it's food that usually you wouldn't like, now you like that too. When you're really hungry, you don't know if the food you're eating actually tastes good. You're just so hungry that anything tastes good right now. Because you go into a different headspace. The Alter Rebbe says one of his memorim, that's what we're talking about. We say feeling for spirituality. That we should actually feel the spiritually starved situation that we're in. And because we feel that spiritually starved situation, we should actually crave and we should yearn and we should be thirsty for holiness, for spirituality. It's just totally counterintuitive. It's not the way God built us. It's just not the way we're built. That is to say, I'm not a big hockey fan, you forgive me. You know, I live in Canada, but I never got bit by the bug. But hockey fans, or Canadians, when they're sitting in the stands and the hockey game goes into overtime, nobody's kvetching. It's like, oh my God. To sit through another 10 minutes of this? No, they're saying, wow, we got our money's worth today. This is amazing. This is amazing. Let's see those hockey sticks fly. One more guy smashed on the ice. One more time the puck is flying. Everybody's going crazy. Now, I don't think little children are intuitively hockey fans. They love seeing people run around on skates, hitting each other and banging each other and sending this little piece of rubber flying across the ice. Nobody's born loving that. But if you live in Canada from a very young age, and this is what your parents are excited about, and all your parents' friends are excited about, so the kid must think, wow, this must be very brilliant, because my parents are the greatest, and they're excited about it. My parents' friends look very brilliant, and they're all excited about it. This must be very amazing. This must be something fantastic. What happens is, it becomes part of your mother's milk, so to speak. It becomes, like, nurtured. It's like, you know, and tragically, in certain parts of the Arab world, little children are infected with this disease of killing people, of making people suffer, of seeing people's blood spill, and they think it's a wonderful thing. And by the time they're 10, their brain is so filled with spiritual arsenic, it's almost impossible to turn them around. Probably is impossible for most of them. Why? Because they become indifferent to human suffering. They subscribe to the hashtag no lives matter, and except for yours, and they're stunted and sick, demented, living in a maniacal, demented state of existence. Now, hockey is not demented, it's not maniacal, it's just fine. It's a wonderful thing, in fact. I think it was the chief rabbi of Montreal, Rabbi Hirschberg, who once said that the greatest miracle of our times is hockey. He lived in Montreal. So they said, why is it a great miracle? He says, when I was a kid, my Polish neighbors would get drunk on Sunday afternoon and come beat us up. He said, now they get drunk and they watch each other, kill each other on television. It's wonderful. He said, nobody bothers me anymore. I'm free. I can learn Torah. So he was never a hockey fan. He never went to play hockey, but he felt it was a wonderful thing. It freed him. Okay. Now, is hockey intuitive? Is it intuitive to love those things? No, but you develop a taste for that. You become excited about that. And you become so excited about that when you're sitting in the stands for more time, you're actually excited about it. Now imagine this. You're never going to see it. You have to imagine it. Imagine that the sermon would go 10 minutes longer in shul. Who would be happy? Imagine that the davening would take that much longer. You have a slow chazan today. And it's like, when is this over? I smell the kiddush already, the chant. what is this person, Meshuggah? He doesn't understand that we all have growling stomachs. What is with him? Right? You know what I'm saying? But the hockey does nothing for you. It's really not that any more fulfilling than the Pokemon Go. You're crunching imaginary monsters, and you're watching a physical puck. But what difference does it make, really, at the end of the day? Whose life is any better? People are such a good mood. Why is such a good, my team won the game today. What is such a good mood for? What did it do for you? Did it fill your stomach? Did it pay your bills? What did it do for you? Everybody's happy. Don't ask questions. The spirituality is actually meaningful. May not, you can't put your hands on it. You can't sink your teeth into it. It's meaningful. So imagine we'd have a craving, and a person didn't learn Torah in 3 days, and they feel sick about themselves, as if he didn't eat food. I didn't learn Torah in 3 days. I haven't learned anything new in 3 days. I haven't become excited by an idea of spirituality in 3 days. That would really be something, wouldn't it? That's what we're supposed to be. We're supposed to serve Hashem emotion. We're supposed to have Ahava V'Yira. It's a mitzvah in the Torah to have Ahava V'Yira. As the Rebbe Rashab points out, one of my mother, even though the mitzvah of Ahava, of love for Hashem, is a mitzvah in and of itself, but the ultimate goal of Ahavat Hashem is to lead you to then slake that thirst by actually doing what Hashem wants, by actually following through with practical mitzvahs. So the person says, I did all the contemplation, I did all the thinking. I don't know, I'm not inspired. I'm not elevated, I'm not jumping up and down. Welcome to the human race. Okay, says Alter Rebbe, I feel for you. I understand your pain. I mean, really, he didn't almost, because he didn't have these problems, but that's the nature of a Rebbe. He could divest himself from his personality, he could assume your personality. This Beinoni has a real problem. The Beinoni says, I'm doing this for 10 years, 15 years, I don't feel excited about it. I'm not excited about putting on film. I'm not excited about lighting Shabbat candles. I'm not excited about putting up another mezuzah. Kvetching that it cost me another $50. I'm not excited about it. That's a problem. He said, I did all the thinking, I did all the learning. So what's going on here? Where's the emet? Where's the avodas Hashem? I have to interject and tell you that there's a very important principle at play here. We believe this is emet, this is the truth. So the truth is, this is not just a faith system that people created. This is emes, this is the emes of Hashem. And because it's the emes Hashem l'olam, it's the real truth, every one of us has a neshama, we really do. And our neshama really does want spirituality, even though we may not know. The neshama really, really does want this. And there's even a yearning for it. The problem is the yearning is latent. It's a potential state. It's called Ahava Mesuteres. It's a very important principle which the Alter Rebbe introduces and continues to talk about throughout the book. This Ahava Mesuteres, this hidden love, this latent love which resides in the recesses of our spiritual subconsciousness. It's been meichli. It's in the mind. It's batalume slibay. It's in the hidden depths of the heart. It's there deep down. It's there, but I don't feel it. I don't feel it. So does that mean that my Avodas Hashem is sorely lacking? Does it mean that I'm basically an ineffective Jew? I'm an emotionally stunted, spiritually autistic Jew who can't relate, who can't get excited, doesn't feel any yearning, doesn't feel any passion. It's a basic mitzvah in the Torah. We say it every day, V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, you should love. I don't feel any love. I know what love is, I never felt it. Imagine a person who has a problem and says, I never felt love. I never felt love. I wish I could love somebody. I don't love anybody. I have lust, he says, but I don't have any love. I never experienced that. It's a sad thing. A person never experienced love. So I wish I could fall in love. I wish I could feel love. I don't know what it is. There are people like that. Now, most people are fortunate not to experience that. And when you do experience love, you don't get a big brownie point in your Avodas Hashem. You don't get a trophy for being super Avodas Hashem. You love your husband or your wife. No, that's normal. And that's intuitive, actually. But when it comes to spirituality, to love Hashem like that, then you get points. Why? Because none of us are born with it. That's not simply a question of developing natural talents. That's a question of self-transcendence. That's a question of getting past the bodily reality, which entombs the neshama and obscures the neshama, and in some ways disables the neshama. If you can feel a neshama experience while you're stuck in a bodily reality, then you have achieved a moment of spiritual weightlessness. That is a real accomplishment. That's what we're supposed to be doing. That's the mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem, which is a constant positive mitzvah. That's the mitzvah of Yiras Hashem, which is a constant, it's a positive mitzvah. How do I get there? And if I'm not there, am I not really serving Hashem? If you are taking Avodas Hashem seriously, which most of us unfortunately don't, but if you take Avodas Hashem seriously, this would bother you. This would bother you. So 1 second. So I'm a failure. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Imagine the spouse who's doting, who's devoted, who's dedicated, feels no love, really doesn't care. really couldn't care less about the spouse, but goes through the motions, and then self-doubts themselves. It's like, am I even a spouse? What am I, like I'm just like going through motions over here? Does this mean anything altogether? Now, I don't know, with the spousal situation, you get a problem. But with regard to Avodas Hashem, here's the Alter Rebbe's response. He says, you have that emotion. It's yours, you have it, it's in you. Every single Jew has within him the idea of an Ahavas Hashem in his mind. He has cerebrally, he can understand and appreciate the concept of love for Hashem. Every single Yid has within his mind the ability to feel on some level. We have it, it's part of who we are, it's in a spiritual DNA. That's how we're created. Now, generally speaking, when we talk about Ahavas Hashem, love for Hashem, not spiritual epiphany moments, which sometimes we're fortunate enough to have, but rather things which are choreographed, things which are worked on and eventually earned. So we have many different levels. So for example, it all begins emotionally, pardon me, intellectually, which means that after a person contemplates something, studies something, learns something, you know, start to value an idea, at a certain point, you come to the conclusion, cerebrally, intellectually, yes, this is a good thing. This is a good thing. This is the right thing. I want this. I want to cleave to Hashem. I want to be closer to Hashem. We all can come to that decision. Most people never come to that decision because they never give it too much thought. Something inside them impels them to go to synagogue 3 times a year or once a year or, I don't know, once a decade. So they feel impelled. They don't know why. They do it. They do it. And garnished. Is it over yet? Okay, good. Let's eat. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to hear about spirituality. Spirituality is not even on their radar. It's not an issue for them. But it should be an issue. It should be an issue. And it should, so you have to ask yourself the question, is it an issue? I don't know. Certain people have a crisis of faith. Certain people have a crisis of mission, a midlife crisis. What am I doing here? What's the point of life? Why did God create me? Just going through endless breakfast, lunches, and suppers, and sleeping, and just existing? What am I doing here? Some people actually get like thoughts like this. They actually deal with it. So that's good. You're thinking about this. That's already a good step. You might actually change once you get out of your little box. You know, if the self-help books would work, there wouldn't be so many of them on the shelf. Because somebody write a self-help book and people figure it out, they'll buy the book and that's it. Why is there endless books every year? There's new people pumping out self-help books because virtually none of them work, that's why. Or they work for a half hour, for a day, for a week. There's very, very few people tell you, I read the self-help book and that's it. You read a whole book, if you're able to actually get one tiny nuance out of it, you're lucky. Because most of the time, in one ear, out the other, doesn't really make a difference. Doesn't change your life in any way, shape, or form. But the Book of Tanya is supposed to change your life. And it can, if you want it to. If you come to be committed to it. So the first thing is, a Yid learns, a Yid becomes aware, a Yid becomes educated, he reaches an intellectual state of surety, certainty. He says, I want this. I've come to the conclusion, I want this. I'm ready to invest time, energy, wherewithal, money. I want this. I want to get this. It's not an emotion. It's not a feeling per se, but it's also not indifference. Cerebral activity is oftentimes characterized with indifference. Ivory tower. There's no ivory tower of feelings. It doesn't exist. Ivory tower syndrome is an intellectual syndrome. It's a syndrome in academia. I couldn't care less. It's an idea. It's a concept. What does that have to do with me? In our tradition, there's a famous story about Aristotle found in a very, very debased situation. And he's confronted by his students. They say, Aristotle, you, the philosopher? This is such a philosophically depraved way of behaving. And he says, there's Aristotle the philosopher and Aristotle the man. And now I'm Aristotle the man. In the academia, the world of academia, they don't have this story. That's not one of their traditions. But it's one of our traditions. A tradition attributed to Aristo. That's the Gemara term for Aristotle. There's a story, I don't know if it's true, but a similar story that I read. I didn't snope it. And even, I don't even believe Snopes anyway, so I don't know whether it's true or not true, if anybody could know, but to tell the story that Einstein had a professor of philosophy that he really loved very much, which is already like a chiddush to me, because I think he was like a scientist. Like, anyway, he's studying this philosophy, and the guy says, Albert, you know, he doesn't speak to him in Yiddish, but like, listen up, kid, marry for money, he says. At the end of the day, at least you'll be taken care of. So Einstein is shocked, and he says to him, you, the philosopher? Like, that's so like crash. So the man says, down the hall, there's a professor at trigonometry. Does he look like a ruler? Does he look like a compass? It's an idea, philosophy. We're talking about philosophies. And then there's real life. So the first thing a Yid is to come and he learns Torah, he says, what is real life about? The real life, this Yiddishkeit is real life. And the moment you come to that mental awareness, to that mental decision, that this is not just a theory that I'm indifferent to, but this is actually something talking about me, this is something personal, it's relevant to me, that moment is it's a big moment. It's a big moment. That's a moment, you turned a corner to some kind of personal connection, to some kind of practical feeling, even though it's still intellectual. It's not a feeling. It's not an emotion. It's not a fully developed, it's not something you're excited about and passionate about. You could be very stoic about it, but you come to this decision. The second level, of course, is when this emotional idea leavens the emotions. The intellectual idea, pardon me, leavens the emotion. It seeds the heart. It starts to bring forth a passionate response. And that Avas Hashem, of course, we could have two ways. There's the Avas Hashem that could then express itself in a full-blown emotion. You know what an emotionally engaged person is. A person that's overflowing with feeling, with exuberance, with excitement, with yearning, with craving. And then there's something called the emotions which are not expressive, non-expressive emotions. You know the emotions are there. You know there's a very strong feeling, but it's not really felt in the heart. People like that. Some people are emotionally distant, even to their own children. They can't bring themselves to crack a smile. You know, they can't get on the floor and be silly with their grandchildren. They don't know how to do that. Like they're like stilted. We call them nerds sometimes. And express themselves. They have difficulty. They're not like an emotional person. So the non-emotional person who doesn't know how to feel those emotions, it doesn't mean they don't have emotions. It just means they don't get emotional. The truth is that a fully balanced person should be able to experience everything. Should be able to experience intellectuality in its fullness. And should be able to experience emotional health, emotion in its fullness. A passionate moment of awareness, to feel an emotion. It's a good thing. It's a healthy thing. So this Beinoni might have a problem. He has no problem experiencing emotions with regard to his children or being able to scream and get excited at a hockey game or get excited over a roast beef or he's excited to go to a nice barbecue. But he has a problem getting excited about the Perek Tanya, excited about another hour of davening. He has a problem excited doing a favor for somebody. He'll do it. He knows it's right and he feels good about it. But he doesn't get excited about it. You see the guy, he's beaming from ear to ear. He said, what are you so excited about? I just gave $500 to tzedakah. I feel like $1 million. Really? No, I was just joking. I'm excited because I won the lottery. Oh, now it makes sense. But there are people who actually get excited for doing somebody a favor. They actually have joy, mamish, real joy. You walk around, so what are you smiling for? The person's smiling from ear to ear. They feel good. They made a difference in somebody's lives. That's a gift. That's an amazing thing. A person could have experience a profound sense of humility when they daven, a sense of their own worthlessness, and at the same time a sense of the exalted nature of what Hashem has tasked them with doing. They walk away feeling so satisfied, they're so happy. They leave davening with a big smile plastered over their face, just feel so fulfilled in davening. That would be amazing. What if the Beinoni says, I can't, I'm sorry, I don't know how to feel that. I walk away from the hockey game smiling, I come home from the barbecue happy. I don't know how to feel happy about this. So Alter Rebbe says, when a person is in this kind of situation, he's explaining now, Hainu, Sha'alev meivin beruach chokma. The heart understands with the spirit of chokma ubina. Chokma ubina are two intellectual components. The first of epiphany, creativity. The second of development. Now this is really, Alter Rebbe is describing what they call today emotional quotients. He's describing it almost 250 years ago. It's quite remarkable. He's describing understanding of the heart, which incidentally bases itself on expressions of the Gemara. Our sages use this terminology. Bina ubo halev mevin. Bina, understanding, and the heart understands. Understanding heart. Because emotions are much more profound than just selfish expressions. Emotions sometimes can be deeply sensitive. Emotions sometimes can be a feeling, but getting somebody else, understanding where they're coming from. So there's this, the lev is mevin, and shebemoichai, Gedulas and Seif Baruch Hu. The Chochma Bina within the intellectual realm understands the greatness of Hashem. And he understands the Kula Kamek Kalach Hashem. He understands how everything is really nothing. in comparison with God. Everything is eclipsed with the greatness of God. Asher al Kain, because he realizes how the greatness of God and the smallness of themselves and the smallness of creation, because he has a profound awareness of this, so what happens is, Asher al Kain, Yasaleh is Baruch Shetichle Elav Nefesh Kochai. It makes sense that you should yearn, you should crave for a spiritual relationship, you should want to be close to him. It actually makes sense. This is, that's amazing. Lidovik Likol Beir, I want to cleave unto God. I want to fulfill my spiritual thirst. I want this. So on one hand, this is amazing. V'gam nafshei v'ruchei shebekirbei, also his nefesh and his ruach, the spirit, the vital spirit, the life inside of him, is yasalahen, is yearning for this. Li'ish kleishalav v'chafeisha v'chitzefa, v'chasheka v'chafeitza, with yearning, with a craving, with a thirst. Latzas minatekon, to leave behind the shell, the scabbard that inhibits them, which is the body, the guf, l'davkabei. But what's the problem? The problem is, you can't reach that. Problem is, he feels he's not able to. He wants to reach, he wants to take leave of self, he wants to reach God, but it's not going. And Bal Korchan, Choyesena Betecha Guf. But the problem is, the heart says, I want to take leave of this, but I can't. I'm stuck in this bodily reality. That's the reality Hashem put me in. It's through this Bei Kalmonas Choyes, he feels almost like a live widow. The widow who knows her husband's alive but can never see him. Imagine, like the pain is like unending. So the neshama feels this terrible, terrible pain, this terrible yearning, this terrible craving. And the truth is that how much you want God, you can never get him. Then the machshava, the consciousness as we experience it within a bodily reality, cannot grasp. It's not tfisa beiklal, it doesn't grasp that we have a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So when can I have this? When can I have this? What's the only way for me to fulfill this thirst? The only way is ka'asher tfiso mislabeshes b'teiru mitzvah. The only way for one to actually experience that spiritual reality is to study Torah, which is God's wisdom, and to perform mitzvahs. K'mashla mechavek ha'melekana, like the person who's grasping the king. So whether the king hugs you wearing one article of clothing or wearing dressed like an Eskimo, the bottom line is, the king hugged me. So Hashem uses the many, many metaphors, many hitlabshus. This is how God is embodied, if you will, in many different levels. But ultimately, the Torah is still the Torah. It's God's wisdom. It's God's will. The mitzvahs are, that's what Hashem wants. This is what Hashem wants from us. So when we're doing the mitzvahs, we're actually as if connecting to the king. The Elazais, but despite this all, in his mind, he comes to this conclusion. He says, this is what I want. I want l'chabir b'cholev v'nefesh ma'id. I want to hug him. I want to grasp him. I want to be close to him. This is what I want. And therefore, he understands that how is that the hainukim tayag mitzvahs. I know the only way to get this is fulfilling the mitzvahs. And the only way to get this is my mind should be, I should be mindful of God. I should be using my powers of speech and articulation to speak about God, to learn about Torah. Hasagas hateda kaniskele, I should be able to grasp Torah. It's all wonderful. The problem with all this is that the person experiences this only on a cerebral level. He doesn't actually get excited about it. It works. It works for him. He does what he's supposed to do. He gets out of bed in the morning. And he goes and he davens, and he knows it's the right thing, and he gives the tzedakah, and he engages and smiles at others. It's all the right things. And he knows cerebrally, he comes to the conclusion, this is right. This is good. I'm ready to sacrifice for it. But he doesn't feel for it, really. He doesn't have any emotional... He's not really excited by it the way he's excited by food or hockey. So what happens then? Did I really serve Hashem? Did I really engage fully? So to get the answer to that, you're going to have to come back next week. Thank you.